All right, two questions that we're going to discuss tonight. One question came from both from people in my shul. One of them came via email, and one was just asked the old-fashioned way by a person asking their rabbi. The email went as follows. Hi, Rabbi Leibowitz. Once again, hi. No exclamation mark. Okay, I'm not insulted. I'm not excited to talk to you. I have a question about my brother, who is a Kohen. My brother is not religious. I know for a fact that he has seriously dated a non-Jew. I'm trying to find someone like him who he could halachically marry, but I rarely get responses when I ask people. I'm wondering if at this point I would be able to set him up with people not halachically normally okay, since at least any children he has may be halalas, but at least they'll be Jewish as opposed to doing nothing, and him likely ending up with a non-Jew and non-Jewish children. Thank you so much and have a great Shabbos. Okay, that's question number one. Question number two, someone came over to me and said that they that their first cousin is getting married to a non-Jew. And they described the family situation was that his aunt and uncle are, you know, they would prefer if their children married Jewish, but they don't have a strong enough connection to care all that much. They were born in Russia. They had no Jewish education. They came over to this country. It happens to be this fellow, the guy who davens my shul. His mother is a balas tshuva, so that's what got it. That's how he says he remembers as a little kid he was eating, cheeseburgers and whatever. And his mother, you know, met a great rabbi from Fairlawn, New Jersey, Rabbi Benjamin Yudin, and became a balas tshuva because if anything would ever convince anyone to become frum, it's meeting Rabbi Yudin and seeing what a tzaddik looks like. So his branch of the family is really the only branch of the family that is religious, and the uncle is extremely angry that people are contemplating not coming to the wedding, and you know family means a lot to them, and mom's going to cut off all ties with the family. This is going to be a complete severance with that whole side of the family. If the frum cousins choose not to come to the wedding. So A, can he go to the wedding? B, should he go to the wedding? And C, what are the gedarim if he does go to the wedding? Are there any gedarim that he needs to follow? So those are the two questions. Which one do you want to do first?
I didn't understand the first question.
Ah, okay, so let's explain the question a little bit. So the situation is, this man is a Kohen. He is not religious at all. He's dated non-Jews before. So clearly the fear of intermarriage, that we all understand, that's a major concern. So his sister, who davens mashul, his sister wants to set him up with a nice Jewish girl. Problem with setting up someone who's not religious, who's a Kohen, with a nice Jewish girl, is that a nice Jewish girl who's kasher l'kahuna is hard to find, considering the type of guy that he is, considering the type of girl that would want to marry him. Meaning, the type of girl that would want to marry him would be a girl who is not religious at all, who probably spent 4 years on a secular college campus, living the lifestyle that goes along with spending 4 years on a secular college campus, and she's therefore likely pasul l'kahuna. So what does it take for a person to be pasul l'kahuna? Who is a kohen not allowed to marry? A grusha. So I don't think you have a concern that all these girls are grushas, right? So now that I marry a grusha, that's nisa daraisa. So that's where we're really going. He's also Kohen's not just parenthetically. Now let him marry a chalutza. That's a nisir midrabanan because it's similar to a grusha. That's a nisir midrabanan. Not allowed to marry a giores. Also not the issue over here. The real issue is any girl who's nivala lepasula, who's had bia with someone that she's not allowed to marry, is labeled a zona. The Torah says that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a zona, meaning it's a mistranslation. When you look in the translation of zona and it says harlot, that is a mistranslation, meaning it is not a prostitute. In fact, if she was a prostitute who was careful to only have Jewish clients, so probably would not be pasul l'kahuna. It would have to be someone that she slept with someone who is not kosher, who she would not be allowed to marry. That would a human who she would not, meaning if she bestiality would not pasul l'kahuna, but a human who she is not kosher to marry, that passels her le kahuna. That's the halacha.
That's what she meant when she said normally, like not normally.
Yeah, so all these girls come from, you know, the typical American experience, which is, you know, living on a secular college campus and whatever goes with that and whatever freedoms and whatever over time. And, you know, her brother must be in his mid to late 20s, so the chance that these girls have not... So if they were careful, their boyfriends were always Jewish, so great. But if they weren't, then you have a problem. Yeah.
Why can't you just tell her, set him up with someone to make sure someone's allowed to marry?
What? Tell her?
Tell the woman wants to set up her brother with a girl. So tell the girl. So tell the sister, set him up with someone. Go ahead, just make sure somebody's allowed to marry. Done.
Yeah, great. She can't find anyone like that.
So then don't set him up.
Well, that's the question. Then he's going to marry a guy. Right. But you shouldn't feel bad. I asked Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein the question and he gave the same answer you gave. I was like, thank you very much, Rabbi Zilberstein. Set him up with someone that he's allowed to marry. Shkoyach. You know, like.
So the question is it better for a Kohen to marry an apostle or a guy?
Not is it better for him to marry an apostle or a guy. I think we would all agree it's better for him to marry an apostle than to marry a guy. Because marrying a guy is the worst thing in the world, but I think the question is better for her to set him up with a puzzle and enable him to marry a puzzle, or let things happen as they may, where there is a likelihood that he on his own will go and marry a guy. That is the question. So we want to do that one first. Well, we might as well. We're on it already. Might as well do that one first. So what's the problem? She's not marrying a guy. What's the problem? What's the issue that she might be violating over here? Lifneiver, Olosamra Damreacha, maybe to some extent. Yeah, so these questions always come up, right? The Lifneiver questions always come up. So what are the heterim in this situation? Meaning she's going to be enabling her brother to marry a puzzle by providing him with that puzzle. So what are the potential heterim? So there are a couple. What are the potential heterim? So first think in general, in terms of Lifnei Iver, what are the potential heterim in Lifnei Iver that we always have in all these shiurim? We always, whenever we discuss Lifnei Iver, so potential heterim normally include, number one, the sheet of the Shach and the Dagul Mervava, that when you're dealing with a person who just simply doesn't care about religion, that when they're making decisions in life, whether it's halachically viable or not, it's not that, you know, they'll do it even though it's not halachically viable. They just don't care. Halachically viable is not baba cheshbon. It's not part of their thought process. The Shach and Dag Mervava hold, there's no iser misayeya midrabanan. There's only an iser lifnei iver d'oraisa on such a person. What's the difference between misayeya midrabanan versus lifnei iver d'oraisa? So we've discussed many times. That lifnei iver d'oraisa, the Gemara says, if you have what we call trei abri dinara, you're a nazir, I have a bottle of wine over here, and let's say I had wine in here, you're a nazir, and there's a river between us with a moat with crocodiles and alligators, you can't get to me. So you say, give me the wine, and I throw you the wine. You could not have gotten this wine otherwise. That is lifnei iver d'oraisa. But if on Chad Abri Dinara, we're on two sides of this desk, and you say, can you pass me the wine? And you can get up out of your seat and get it yourself, but it makes it easier if I just hand it to you. That is Lifnei Iver Midrabanan. So that kind of Lifnei Iver is mutter with a non-religious Jew, according to this Shach and Dagul Mervava, which we often rely on. Great. Which kind of Lifnei Iver is this? Why? So he could always find himself a puzzle. So this is somewhat questionable to say that this is only misayeya. And let me explain why. It's one thing to say that the guy, the nazir, can take this cup of wine. He could do it himself. And I am now enabling him to take this cup of wine. It's another thing entirely to say that he can always find wine somewhere.
You could have found that girl.
Nah, could he?
Then why
What are the chances?
His sister knows her, why doesn't he?
Okay, what are the chances that he'd be able to find that girl that his sister finds? Yeah, it's true, he might find a puzzle somewhere, but not so clear that that's called... Meaning, if I'm selling something to... If I'm providing food, non-kosher food, to a Jew who doesn't care about kashrus, is that only misayeya because he can go to a store and buy non-kosher food elsewhere? Not so sure. That might be Livnei Vidar Raisa. He could buy other non-kosher food. He can't buy this non-kosher food. So that's somewhat at least debatable. So that's one potential heter, but at least debatable as far as the heter goes. What other heter might there be in terms of Lifnei Iver? Why this would not be Lifnei Iver? So we've discussed also in the past that you have to look at any given action and say, is this a Maisa of Lifnei? You know, Lifnei Iver is, I try to encourage you to do an Aveda. So I go over to you and I say, look, I got this delicious wine. I know you're a Nazir. It's awesome. You got to try it. It's fantastic. So I'm obviously trying to be machti you. I'm trying to cause you to do an Aveda. But if I see that you're, I don't know, I got these frantic emails today, about 10 of them, about some meat they're selling in Costco that has a notoriously bad ashkacha, and people are like, oh, I spoke to some Rav in Brooklyn who said that the meat's not kosher. Who's buying it anyway? I don't know. But anyway, the that's the power of social media. That if it's on social media, like all caps. So where was it? So I see a person has this meat. I know it's not glat. I know for sure it's not glat. Even the ashkacha says not glat. The notoriously bad ashkacha says not glat. But there was some semblance of a shechita done on it, otherwise you wouldn't have the ashkacha at all. Someone's about to eat that, or there's mamish nevela. A nevela. How do I know? I saw someone just shot the animal in the head, and it's right there. Mamish. So if I see he's about to eat the nevela, and instead I hand him the Costco meat that has ashkacha and had some semblance of a shechita done on it, am I doing a Maisa Lifnei Iver? I'm doing a Maisa Hatzala. I'm trying to save him from the worst Isser. So it's true, I'm causing him to do an Avera, but if you look at what I'm really doing, you can't label that as helping him do an Isser or enabling an Isser. The proper way to label that is I'm being Matzil him, I'm saving him from an Isser. So one could argue that such a circumstance would not fall in the category of Lifnei Iver. Yeah?
In the case of the meat, it's something kosher. The girl with the guy...
Ah, good. So you're right. That, right. Is lesser Isser, would this work when it's a lesser Isser rather than a Safek kosher? That's true. But nevertheless, even with a lesser issue, one could argue that it's a Maisa Hatzala. I think the bigger issue over here is, it's not like there's a non-Jew right now that he's going to marry until I find him a Jew to put in her place. I don't know what's going to happen if I don't set him up with a Jewish woman. He may never get married. He may marry a non-Jew. He may marry a Jewish woman who's kosher for all I know. I don't know what's going to happen. I think chances are, since he doesn't care who he dates, and there's a very solid chance that he's gonna, based statistically, that he's gonna meet a non-Jewish woman, but I don't know for sure. It's not like it's such a clear Maisa Hatzala, so that's not abundantly clear. Yeah.
Well, don't we say, we should ask you for later? Like, even though, like in this specific case, like even though, I guess in the big picture, it's a Maisa Hatzala, but like technically, like he's still doing, he's living all
the... No, what we're saying is that's not the definition of Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver L'Asitim Michshol means don't cause someone to do an Avera. But when you're saving someone from an Avera, that's not called Lifnei Iver.
You're saving someone from doing a bigger Avera.
Right. Similar to, but not exactly the same as Rav Avadya's tshuva about keeping a meat restaurant open during Shmuel Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, where... how can I give someone meat? Shmuel Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av is violating of the, and for Ashkenazim during the 9 days, but it's violating the minhag of not eating meat during the 9 days. It's a violation of the minhag. So but if we don't keep the restaurant open, the kinds of people that eat meat during the 9 days would be eating at a non kosher restaurant. So it's a Maisa Hatzala. So I don't know if Vadya Paskins you're allowed to in that situation if that's the concern. So it's not in my silver favor. But it is the favor I'm causing them to do an Isser, but I'm saving them from the much worse Isser.
Is this Lifnei Iver? If you have meat in front of you, keen to meet right now. She's just setting him up. He's not getting married to her.
She's just setting him up. He's what he does after that is up to him. So how direct does it have to be for it to be lifnei iver? Meaning to introduce a person to another person.
Yeah.
You know, let's say I have someone that works in my office. The girl has someone that works in her office, let's say, and her brother's at her house, and she says, hi, this is my friend, whatever, and it just because they were there and they introduced each other. Oh, lifnei iver, because I can't introduce, this is my dog. Oh no, lifnei iver, he may want to marry the dog. That's not lifnei iver. So that's a fair point as well.
Also, wouldn't she be making the lifnei iver in terms of other iserun they might do with this girl that would make her possible?
That would make her
possible kuna in the first place. She's setting him up with a girl who she knowingly is possible kuna.
I think it's foregone conclusion that those kinds of isurim are things he does regularly.
I think it's a similar question, like setting up two
similar question, but this is a little more poignant because this is an actual, these people are not allowed to be married to each other. Two non-religious Jews are allowed to be married to each other. You just hope that she'll go to the mikveh or something. So it's similar, but not exactly the same. But I think the real heter over here to work with is that you don't know anything about her history, nor do you necessarily have to ask. Meaning, I don't think you have to ask her, who were your boyfriends? You could probably easily find out by going on Facebook, but I don't think you need to ask her, full list. I want all your boyfriends from the past. I want to know exactly. I don't think you necessarily need to do that. The problem is, though, let's say you don't. Let's say you don't ask. Always try to think of best case scenario. What's the best case scenario if she sets him up with a Jew? What's the best case scenario?
They get married.
And even better case scenario? They get inspired. They get invited for a Shabbat meal somewhere, and one thing leads to the next thing. They're like at the Kotel and they're praying and that, right? And they become religious. They become Balei Tshuva. The best case scenario, right? And then she says, "Oh yeah, by the way, I'm a Zona," and he says, "Oh yeah, by the way, I'm a Kohen. Oh my God, we have to get divorced." So, do you want to go down that road? Meaning, you want to put them on that road when what you're most hopeful for would be an absolutely heartbreaking thing? So, normally, what we do in those cases is first we look at the kahuna and we start questioning the kahuna, which is always a tricky thing to do because often, let's say in this family, he's a kohen, he's the only one that's not frum. His brothers are all frum. So you're going to go posel their kahuna, they'll be like, hey, they'll go posseling our kahuna. And that happens all the time, by the way. One brother in all family falls in love with a grusha and he wants to get married. So he's, a lot of kohanim have this misconception. They think they could just renounce their kahuna. I hereby renounce my kahuna. They can't. They can't even make themselves a chalal. No matter how bad they are, there's nothing they could do. They can make their children chalal. They can't undo their own kahuna. But if you look back in the yichus, the grandmother was a shvuya, the mother was a zona, this was a grusha, chalutza, they come up with something in order to... It's very, very challenging, though. Rav Asher Weiss, who's a big, big, broad-shouldered posek in many areas, but particularly in areas relating to yichus, and he's not afraid to say a kula, and he works very, very hard to come up with kulas in this area. In fact, he just said this week he was talking about he has certain shittos about abortion that maybe not everyone agrees with. Where in certain dire circumstances he allows abortion much more easily than other poskim might. And he said, I really wish other poskim would join me in this psak, because if I do have to sit in Gehenna after 120 years, I don't want to be so lonely. But one of the things he said when he wrote a tshuva on one of these yichus issues, he said he wrote a tshuva to be mekel on one of these heartbreaking yichus related issues, and he showed it to a talmud of his, who's a talmud chacham, and the talmud goes through the tshuva and critiques the tshuva. This is tzarachia, and that's a shvera svara. That doesn't work. That raya is not such a good raya. Goes through, writes a whole critique of the tshuva. Rav Asher looks at the critique of the tshuva and he says, if my tshuva was in Hilchus Netilas Yadayim, I would accept every single one of your ha'aros. But this is in Hilchus Yichus, so I reject all of your ha'aros. Meaning that there is a certain slant, there's a certain need to be mekel in these types of circumstances. What? Yeah, well, Vagunos for sure. Now, the main thing I think is that you don't have to necessarily ask all the questions. You don't have to know whether she was Nivala Lepasala or not. A lot of times, you know, you have situations where there was something and you don't know, and you have to work, you know, post-come after. My brother had a Shaila a number of years ago where a young woman was, it was a horrible, horrible situation. She was in Israel in seminary, and she was walking through Gan Sakher, and she was raped, and the rapist got away, and they never caught him. So she has no idea. Was she Nivala Lepasala? She's dating a Kohen now. She wants to know, can she get married to a Kohen? So she has no idea. Was it an Arab or was it a Jew? She has no idea. So what are the halachos over there? So he sent the shaila to Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Schechter, Rav Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, you know, and picked the best answer. These are complicated issues. That happened to have been a very interesting machlokas of Rashi Weiss and Rav Schechter, because the halacha is you need trei rubi, you need a double rov, you need rov of the people in the city to be Jewish and rov travelers through the city to be Jewish. So double rov is, Rav Schechter understood, is a super strong majority statistically. So if you have a super strong statistical majority, that's what you need. Whereas Rav Asher said, no, you need actual two roves. You need to look at who lives in the city and who travels through the city. So because Rav Shachter thought you can go to the police station and ask them, you know, of the rapists that you caught, how many of them are Jewish and how many of them are not Jewish? And, you know, and use that as the starting point. Look at statistically what the chances are. This is Rav Shachter l'shitasa, that he thinks dinim of rove, for the most part, means statistics. By cows, by milk, right. This was the Nekudas HaMachlokas about the kashrus and milk. Yeah, so I think in the you also have issues of ne'amanus over here. Even if the girl were to say that I never had an intimate relationship with an non-Jew, is she believed? If she had intimate relationships with other people, is she believed about something like that? You know, Rav Asher has a tshuva in Chelek Aleph from Minchas Asher, where he talks about a woman who was a balas tshuva. She was married to a non-Jew for several years. The husband died, and now she wants to marry a Kohen. Oh, that's a no-brainer. She was married to a non-Jew. No way. She says, never had bia. Married for several years, never had bia. He wasn't capable. Wasn't able to have bia. Does she have ne'amanus or something like that? So a doctor examines and says she's a basula. But does that mean that there wasn't even a tchilas bia, that there wasn't even a ha'ara? How do you know? These are complicated issues. I think in this case, I think for the most, you know, I asked my brother what he thought, and he said, we've discussed many times issues involving whether a rav can recommend the lesser iser since the other option is worse. I think you probably have enough examples to give an entire shiur on the topic. Little does he know, I've given three, you know, just these topics. But, okay, so that I think she's best off not asking too many questions of these girls and saving the brother from intermarriage to the best of her ability. Speaking of which, let's use that as a segue into our attitude toward intermarriage in general and whether one is allowed to attend such a wedding. So first of all, there is no halacha in Shulchan Aruch. Oh, there is a halacha that you're not allowed to marry a non-Jew. That is clear. There is no halacha that you're not allowed to attend a wedding that is an intermarriage. No explicit halacha that says like that. So what are the issues? Why are we so nervous about this. So there is a halacha that one is not allowed to support an avera, that you're not allowed to encourage an avera. If you are walking down the street one day and you pass by your neighbor's farm and it's Shemitah and you're in Israel and your neighbor's plowing on his farm in Israel during Shemitah, you're allowed to say, good morning, neighbor, but you're not allowed to say, have a great day plowing. I hope it goes well for you, neighbor, because you're not allowed to encourage it. That's not my example. That's the Mishnah's example. I would have picked a different example. But you see your neighbor eating a cheeseburger, and he's a Jew. You're allowed to say, good morning. You're not allowed to say, I hope you enjoy that delicious-looking cheeseburger. You're not allowed to encourage a person to do an issur. So we get into the issue of what's called encouraging. Is it encouraging a person to intermarry when you are going to the wedding and dancing at the wedding and saying mazel tov or congratulations? So happy for you. You should have a wonderful life together. Here's a gift. What is that called encouraging of the... So that's on the one hand. And very often, when people are doing something that is so against what their family stand for, they realize that. They realize that this is like a major breach that they're breaking in their family, and they look for any little sign of anything to say that that's their silver lining, that, oh, they're starting to come around. They're starting to accept. Look, they came to the wedding. They may not have been happy, but they came to the... So they're starting to accept us. They're starting to understand. They're starting to come around and realize that that this intermarriage prohibition is racist or whatever. You know, whatever ridiculous tainas they have. So one has to be careful about that. On the other hand, we're always concerned about the well-being of every Jew, spiritually and physically. And we most want Jews to do tshuva. And the chances are, if you don't give them any room to connect to you anymore, and there's no open line of communication that they still have with a religious Jew, they're not coming back so easily. You know, Rav Zilberstein writes in his most recent pamphlet, someone asked him, that they a Russian family in Israel, that they said all of our children had trouble with shidduchim. They all got married late. And one of the children was so upset by the trouble that his siblings were having in shidduchim that he said, you know, I know why it is. It's these frum Jews. They're biased against Russians, and because we're from Russia, they're not they don't look at us, and they know what, and left the religion, and married a non-Jewish woman, and as soon as he did that, the family cut him off. We're never talking to you again. Now that boy's twin brother is getting married. They were very close as children. And the boy sent an email to the parents, please let me come to the wedding. I want to come to the brother's wedding. Not asking to bring the shiksa, just I want to come to the brother's wedding. I'll keep Shabbos if you let me come to the wedding. I'm not divorcing my wife, but I'll keep kosher if you let me come to the wedding. So they asked Zubusin, what should we do? Should we let him come to the wedding? He said, of course you let him come to the wedding. You need to... He's asking you, please save me. He's not ready for everything yet, but no one's ready for everything at one time. So you need to have some sort of connection. And he tells a remarkable story. I think I had heard the story. I think it's in one of the biographies. He said that when Rav Elyashiv was sitting Shiva for his wife, when Rav Elyashiv's wife died, a person came to the Shiva house, said, I just got off a plane, you don't know me, I'm getting back on a plane right after this Shiva call. I just had to be Menachem Avil because of what your wife did, told Rav Elyashiv, because of what your wife did for my family. Okay, so begs the question, Rav Elyashiv is not the most talkative person, but someone there said, what did my wife, what did she do for your family? Well, we had a daughter who went completely irreligious, married a non-Jewish man. Marriage didn't work out, as often happens, not because of she did tshuva or anything. She didn't do tshuva, just the marriage didn't work out, because more than 50% of marriages don't work out, so in the secular world. So, they got divorced. She still wasn't religious at all. She wanted to make her parents happy. She came to shul on Yom Kippur for like a half hour, sat there with the machzor next to her mother on Yom Kippur. The day after Yom Kippur, she died. Suddenly, young woman. So the family lives in Switzerland. They want to bury her. The Chevra Kedisha says, we're not burying her in a Jewish cemetery. She was married to a guy. You know, what keeps you out of a Jewish cemetery? Not a tattoo. A tattoo doesn't keep you out of a Jewish cemetery. Intermarriage might. Married a guy. We're not burying. She was divorced from the guy. Oh, come on. She was divorced from the guy because it didn't work out. Not because she did tshuva. What can we do to get you to bury our daughter in a Jewish cemetery? Give us a little nechama. Give us something for the Chevra Kedisha said, you can get a psak from Rav Eliyashiv that it's okay. Then we'll bury you. So the mother and father got on a plane. They're in Aninus. They got on a plane, went to Eretz Yisrael, went to the Rebbetzin, to Rav Eliyashiv's home, and they told the Rebbetzin the story. Rebbetzin, before they told the Rebbetzin, they said, we need to speak to Rav Eliyashiv. He's learning now. He can't be disturbed. Because they were very protective of him during his learning start. And that's how he became Rav Eliyashiv. Not because he was, you know, taking out a smartphone and answering every email that, you know. So he had times where he couldn't be disturbed. So they said, you don't understand. The Aninus, our daughter's not buried, told the whole situation. Rebbetzin was old, she could barely walk. She was the daughter of the Tzaddik Rav Aryeh Levin. She could barely walk. She walks barely to the old Sarah Shul where Rav Eliyashiv learned for 100 years, literally, straight, just sat down and learned there for 100 years. She walks there, the door is locked, no one's allowed in, right? He sits there alone. She bangs on the window. Yosef Shalom, this is important. And he comes out and he talks to them. He says, she was in Shul in Yom Kippur? Yeah. She had a machzor open? Yeah. She was saying some words? Yeah. So she did tshuva before she died. Of course she should be buried in a Jewish cemetery. They got their psak from Rav Eliyashiv, got right back on the plane. So that was so Rav Zilberstein said, look, you're in so much of a better situation. Your son's still alive. And he's reaching out. And it's more than just a half hour on Yom Kippur. He's saying that he wants to have some sort of connection. So that is certainly a factor to retain some sort of connection. The attitudes in Poskim about attending an intermarriage, though, vary greatly. Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Schechter, Rav Twersky, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein were very, very opposed to ever attending any intermarriage.
Assuming it's not in
the
church.
Oh, for sure, assuming it's not in the church. Rav Schechter assumes attendance, or certainly used to tell us that attendance at the wedding, or buying a gift for the wedding, or saying congratulations, is an acknowledgement that it is a marriage, and we cannot do that. We're never allowed to invite them as a couple. You can be nice to the non-Jew like you're nice to any non-Jew, but not as a couple. Not because they are your brother-in-law or sister-in-law or whatever. Not as a couple. And sometimes you'll lose the relationship, but that's what has to be done. Rav Twersky similarly says, he wrote in a Torah Web article a number of years ago that the Rav Zatzal was absolutely adamant regarding the ban on attending intermarriage. Often we try to rationalize and justify attendance of such weddings. We reason that if the Jewish partner comes from an assimilated background, was never exposed to Yadus, what right do we have to judge him or her and boycott the wedding? Why should a Baal Tshuva strain family relations by absenting himself or herself from a sibling's wedding? It's not the sibling's fault. You know, I'm the one that became the crazy one who became a Baal Tshuva, he might say. The rest of my family just did what they were brought up to do. But of course, this line of reasoning, says Rabbi Twersky, is fallacious. In refusing to attend an intermarriage, we are not judging another individual. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam can pass judgment on one's liability and to what extent extenuating circumstances should be taken into account. But although we refrain from judging individuals and affixing individual liability in such cases, we can and must judge actions and courses of action. Unquestionably, intermarriage is anathema because it destroys Jewish identity and destiny. It is nothing less than a chilul Hashem to be present at such a marriage. Adamant. Rav Lichtenstein similarly says unequivocally, absolutely opposed to attending an intermarriage. On the other hand, Rav Asher Weiss made the following chiluk. He said, it really depends who you are. He says, you know, if your brother, Rachmana Litzlan, your cousin is getting married to a non-Jew, you're not at the wedding because you support intermarriage. You're at the wedding because it's your brother. You're at the wedding because it's your cousin. And nothing about you being there says that you support intermarriage. This is Rav Asher's take. He says, unless you're an Adam Chashuv. He says, if you're a rabbi, you're a Rosh Yeshiva, and everyone says, ooh, the rabbi came, the Rosh Yeshiva came. So that's already a statement. That you shouldn't do. But if you're a Pashaliyah, then he doesn't think that there, and he thinks, Adaraba, you need to retain a connection. Because that chances are, statistically, they're going to get divorced. The rate of divorce on intermarriage is higher than the rate of divorce in the general population, because, you know, people come from such different backgrounds. One person is, you know, brought up to believe in Jesus, and the other one is, you know, like, such different backgrounds. Even when we do a gerus, you know how hard it is to get Jesus out of people's heads? Like, it's such a part of the culture, it's such a part of what they're... So chances are that they're gonna that they're not gonna stay married forever, and they're gonna need to know that there's someone to come back to. Very, very different approach than Rav Soloveitchik and his Talmidim. Now, in terms of our attitude toward intermarried people, Rechiel Yaakov Weinberg has a tshuva in Sri Deish where he discusses whether you can count them toward a minyan. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Nun Hei in Aruch Chaim says that you can count an avaryan to a minyan as long as he hasn't been put in chayrim. But if he's been put in chayrim, so he's excommunicated, can't count him toward a minyan. So Prima Gadim says, yeah, that's assuming if he's a mumer l'teyavim. But if he's a mumer l'hachis, then you can't count him toward a minyan. Rabbi Chilul Yaakov Weinberg writes that he may be a mumer l'teyavim. That may be the case. But there is no doubt that we would put him in chayrim if we had the power to. Meaning he has cut himself off from the Jewish community. We would say, you cannot be part of the Jewish community. And therefore, he should not be counted to a minyan.
Someone married a non-Jew.
Someone married to a non-Jew. That was his... He said, the halacha is we'd be obligated to put him in chayrim to discourage that kind of behavior, and therefore he has the status of having been put in chayrim, and mela, we're not allowed to count him toward a minyan. So, as I said, these are very, very complicated issues. You know, on the one hand, we always want to keep an open line, we always want to... The question of unconditional love is a very difficult question. You know, there was a panel recently of someone interviewing a variety of Gedolei Yisrael, asking about the question of unconditional love. The kid does completely off. Do you show unconditional love? So there are different answers. Not everyone holds it. You know, there are sources, strong sources, in Chazal and quoted by Rishonim and even quoted in the Beis Yosef La'alacha about a person who's completely rejected Yiddishkeit, to the point that Beis Yosef writes in one place, such a person, when he dies, there's no avelus, and the family and the friends should get dressed in white. Ochlim v'shosim usmechim sha'avdu son of shalmakom. Pretty heavy stuff. But on the other hand, does that really work anymore? Does the whole sitting shiva thing work anymore? That's cute, you're sitting shiva. Me and my wife are going to go on our honeymoon in the Bahamas. You know, like, it may not be the most effective way to keep people in the fold. When we had a strong, there was no other Jewish community other than the Orthodox community, and you were sort of removing yourself from the Jewish community. There was nowhere else to go. You know, it was one thing, but when you have synagogues and temples that have open door policies to intermarried couples and they welcome it and love it, it's not the most effective way. Warmth is probably a more effective way, and keeping a line of communication is probably a more effective way. I should note, Rav Schachter also said, very important to keep a line of communication and to always be, you know, let them know that they have who to talk to, but you just can't do anything that acknowledges the marriage. So, yeah, different, there is no clear halacha. In the end of the day, if anyone has this kind of situation, you must talk it over with someone who is not only a Talmud Chacham, but is wise, is God-fearing, and we'll give you an honest answer. We'll not feel pressure to tell you what you want to hear, but we'll handle it with wisdom and sensitivity, and keep all of this in in mind as he's as guiding you. It should never happen to anyone here, but as guiding a person through such issues. Everyone, on that note, have a wonderful Shabbos. See you next week.